4:55 on Friday, October 21st.
Nobody reminded me in 3:55 this morning, so that recording didn't get made either. So today I want to talk about mainly about select and the use of select to determine which of several file descriptors is ready to work. But before that, I wanted to show you something cool that I only discovered recently and maybe you know about. This is BYOBU, B-Y-O-B-U. It's a program that virtualizes a single sort of plain text shell window into as many of them as you want. I don't find it terribly easy to navigate around, but when you're doing all your routers and wanting to see the console output from all of them, this might be helpful. So BYOBU. You may have
also
to install
it.
Well, screen is this is an enhancement on screen, right? So if you just do screen, you don't get quite such a nice gadget, such as I think on screen you can only split it vertically, and BYOBU lets you also split things horizontally, so you can get more windows on a screen. So anyway, that might be of use. You have to look at the man pages, and if anybody knows how to quickly bounce directly to one of the windows from where you are. Well, okay, maybe. All right, I will try it, because I again have a come from sort of or a come hither function that I know how to do. If I'm in a window, I can make one of the other windows come here, but I don't know how to quickly move the active cursor into an arbitrary other window. You can do it by tabbing through them, but
can you alt tab back?
No, you can't. You can't alt tab back, and it isn't exactly tab. You have to use the escape character first. So it's a two key sequence to move from one window to the next, and that gets pretty old when you have a lot of windows. So what I decided to do was I would just make a focus window where I would summon the window I wanted to interact with into it, and do it that way. But anyway, if you need a lot of shell windows on the screen, that's a cool way to do it. And the other cool thing about it is, of course, that you can disconnect from all of this and go someplace else and connect back to it. So that's what I did here. This is a screen that I have on my desktop normally, and in order to illustrate it, I was just able to summon it here and do it. So that's neat. Anyway. Tip of the day. So select. So the problem, select is one of the, is a new to us socket system call. And the problem it solves is my program needs to react to data arriving on any of a number of different sockets. So my program has many sockets open, well, more than one, and any of them might have data coming, and whichever one it is, that's the one I need to react to. That's the issue that select deals with. So I'll show you the sort of syntax and semantics of select, and then we'll talk about how it actually gets used in practice. So the syntax, yes, no, yes, yes. Well, actually, I'll either post this set or I'll post a set that I'm working from,
okay.
from before. It's also in the book, in the TCPIP WSOC NC book. It's not in the Kuros and Ross, as far as I know.
Okay.
But the little book has a good discussion of this,
okay.
and the man pages, of course, are. Great reference, but there's sort of some conceptual things that it helps to just talk through before you try to tackle the written description. So the syntax and there are a couple of tricks. That's the whole description of the thing. And we'll talk about each of these parts in turn. I guess we'll start with the timeout. A struct timeval looks like this. All right, so a timeval is something that represents some number of seconds and microseconds. And we'll talk about how it's used here in select in a sec, in a timeout of time. The other things that are in here are FD stands for file descriptor sets, FD sets. And the meaning of select is to wait for any of the file descriptors in readD to become ready for reading, any in writeD to become ready for writing, and any in exceptionD to be in an exception state, like closed or something. And to wait until one of those things happened or this amount of time has gone by and then return. And the return value select is -1 if an error occurred. That's not the same thing as an exception FD becoming ready. This is you passed it something that was invalid, bad timeval, a bad FD set, something like that. So the usual sort of Unixy -1, and then ErrorNo tells you what it is. As usual. 0 means that a timeout occurred. Greater than 0 means that many FDs are ready. Okay, so it doesn't, this greater than 0 number doesn't tell you very much. It tells you that many of these file descriptors spread across these three sets are ready to do what you asked about. And it's then your job to figure out which ones. Okay? But it gives you help in that, because when it returns with greater than zero, it will have modified each of these file descriptor sets to say which file descriptors are actually ready. Okay, so you have to sort of work through those, and I'm going to show you the code for that in here in a moment. Okay, so what is a file descriptor in Unix land? What sort of value is it? It's an integer. It's a small integer, right? They start at zero. You start with 0, 1, and 2 and sort of work upward from there. And in order to minimize the amount of work that the kernel has to do, right, you could have potentially tens of thousands of file descriptors in use in your program, and the kernel somehow would have to, the operating system would have to sort of look at all those and determine whether they're ready or not. So that's the role of this max descriptor plus one. So you have small integers for the file descriptors. You're required to tell select how many different possible values of file descriptors it has to look at. And that is not the number of file descriptors that are included in these sets. This is the number that is one bigger than the biggest of these small integers that appears in these sets. See what I mean? Right, so each of these sets is a set of small integers. You take the maximum small integer appearing in any of those sets and add one, and that's the number that you pass here as max descriptor plus one. This is easy to get wrong, right? The typical thing that happens is that you put in the number of file descriptors, and that's not right. It's got to be one more than the biggest one. And then the kernel, in looking at these file descriptor sets, knows that it only has to look at that many, because these file descriptor sets are passed as bit vectors. Right? So the bit vector representation of a set is bit 0 represents 0 being in the set, bit 1 represents bit 1 being in the set, and so on and so forth. So basically this is telling the kernel how many bits it has to look at to find the file descriptors that you're telling it about. Okay, so that's fine. Oh, so I said that when select returns, it has modified the FD sets to reflect which ones are ready, and I'll show you how you test for that. It also, at least on Linux systems, it's not true on all systems, but on Linux systems, it modifies the timeout structure to say how much time is left. So if you said 30 seconds, and after 10 seconds one file descriptor became ready, then the timeout value that you passed would now say there's 20 seconds left. And this is handy because if you want to do something periodically, you don't have to always be recalculating how much time is left. It does it for you. But it does mean that you have to reinitialize it when you want to start over again. Okay. Okay, so how do you get these file descriptor sets? I guess I should have looked this up. I don't have it on my notes. You have to include something or other. But I don't remember what it is. Maybe something like sys/inet.h or something like that. No, that wouldn't be right. Well, you know what? I was going to say, you could look in the man pages. Well, yes, you could. So what's my... Okay. That tells you the things that you need to include to use select. So sysselect.h or in earlier standards time.h, types.h, and unistandard.h. Okay, so you go along with whatever the man page says for this. And once you've done that, you will have available these FD operations to manipulate file descriptor sets. So let me go through those. Wants to use select. Okay, so once you've done that, then you can declare an FD set. Like so, right? FD set is a type, and readD is the value of that type that's being declared. And you can manipulate these days it's an array. It's got to be an array in order to have enough bits in it to represent all the possible file descriptors.
So is that actually really large?
Yeah, it can be.
I'm just wondering if...
Yeah. Don't remember. See, because it's been abstracted away, they're free to change it a bit, as long as they maintain binary compatibility. Let's find out. Let's see if I can do this on the fly. Pound sign include. Select.h
looks like a string of 224 bits.
Okay, let's see what size of. To include something for printf, which is 10, 80 bytes to 2005. 8 times 80 is 640. Okay, that's pretty large. 640 file descriptors are supported directly, and there are ways to manipulate things so you can do even more, but we're not going to have that problem, I promise. All right. Anyway, so then to manipulate these FD sets, you're not supposed to understand how they're implemented, right? That's the whole point of being abstract with this stuff. So there are these macros that do it. You pass in the address of a FD set, and it will turn them all to zero. You can turn on individual bits. You can turn off individual bits.
Are those bits? Are they like pound defined somewhere, or do you just say turn on file descriptor 1?
You say turn on file descriptor 1. So this interface is actually operating in terms of the file descriptors you get back from, like, the socket system call. Okay. So you really don't have to worry about that representation at all. And in Windows, similar things work, but there you only have socket descriptors for this, and they aren't small numbers at all. It's a completely different implementation, but the idea is the same.
What would you use, like, having a write set? Because the write is on your local machine, so I understand how you're waiting for things that are sending to you, but in what case do you actually
wait for a write?
Yeah. Isn't it into write already? Like, it won't write if you can't.
Okay. So writing is much less common that you encounter blocking. But you can encounter blocking if the kernel buffers are full for a stream. Like for example, in TCP, if your local application is going much faster than the remote application, then the TCP window will close, and your application won't be able to write anymore. Okay, and it would block. And the whole point of this is to avoid getting stuck doing something you can't do, while something else that you're supposed to be doing is ready to be done. All right. So in our routing project, you don't have to worry about doing selects for writing, right? Because we're not going to be writing so much that it would ever block. But reading, certainly, you do, because the data is only going to arrive sporadically. It's going to arrive sporadically from different places. Okay, so this, most of these are clear. This one zeroes out the whole set. This one turns on a particular bit. This turns off a particular bit. And this tests a bit. So this FD is set will return 1 or 0, depending on whether that bit is set. Too many sets here. There are whether that bit is turned on in the set. Okay. Any questions about that? It's just really basic low-level set manipulation customized for working with sets of file descriptors. Okay, so how do you use it? You usually want to build array of all the FDs of interest. So this is an array that looks like, you know, 3, 17, 22, 27. Okay, it's an array of file descriptors. You're going to want that because you have to build the FD sets to pass to select, and you also have to do other things with these file descriptors. So the best thing is just build an array of the file descriptors themselves that you have. So we might say then you fill that array in as you create the sockets, either with the socket system call or the accept syscall. Now, in our routers project, since we're using UDP sockets, we won't be using accept. It will just be the ones we create with socket itself. So you fill that in. And as you go, compute max descriptor. Okay? So remember, we need to know the number corresponding to the largest descriptor that we get. All right, so you do that.
I mean
the actual number. Okay, we've got to have this actual number. Okay. Now, usually, we have a loop. Because we really want to process input from all the descriptors repeatedly, right? The whole idea of this is we're using it in a situation where people are going to be sending us data, we're going to process it, and then we're going to go back to listening for more data from them. So this is all going to be in a loop. So we have a while. And I'll leave it up to you as to what the terminating condition is. Have our FD set, and let's just assume that we're only going to do this for the read file descriptors, because we're not going to worry about the write ones, we're not going to worry about the exception ones. So we'll just do it for the one set, but you can see how it generalizes to the other two. And let's see. The other thing, we'll just say max descriptor. And it turns out, you're right, we also need to know the number of descriptors. So we'll keep track of that as we go too. And we'll stuff all that stuff into SurfSock. Okay, this is our initialization. So don't forget to initialize the timeout structure with the appropriate timeout value. And I think in our project, this is probably best going to be 30 seconds. You'll want to do that. But it can be, you know, it can be whatever you want it to be. And then, do that. Okay, and now you're waiting for something to happen. There's a missing comma. It's also possible to pass null as the address of the timeout structure. That means wait forever. So a select where you pass a null timeout says it won't return until something happens on the file descriptor. Yeah.
So, am I correct in that when you like initialize your entire like router network,
mm-hmm.
are they all going to connect to each other? Is that
they are?
And then they're going to start waiting for
connection. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so the first thing that like I'm assuming that we're going to make like multiple executable like. You'll run the same executable for multiple, like 10 times to get
mm-hmm.
10 different routers.
Right.
And then all those routers, the first thing they'll do is they'll, okay, I need to connect to my
right.
router, and then, okay.
Right.
Sure
so all the connecting happens before this starts, right? This is where we are once all that has happened, and we're about ready to read things.
Gotcha.
Okay, good. So you wait forever. You can also pass TV sec 0, TV microsec 0, and then it will always immediately return, either telling you that it has found some ready descriptors or that it is timed out immediately. That's not a good idea. Programs that do that will sort of use all the available CPU time. But you can do it. All right. So going on, what happens when it returns? And based on what I said earlier, if res is less than zero, then you have to do error handling. Else, if res is equal to zero, then you have to do your timeout handling, whatever that is. Else, well, in this case, it's telling you res is greater than zero, so there's some number of ready file descriptors that you can now process. And so how do you do that? Well, we go back to our array of sockets, that's not what I said. And now we check if FD is set. That's the if, that's the for, that's the else, and that's the while.
So it recomputes your FD table, and everything on set is now something that needs to be read.
That's right. I'm one step ahead of myself here constantly. For else while. And that's it. That's what you do. Things that trip people up. If you manage to screw up this code and not process the file descriptors, you'll go into an infinite loop. Right? Because if you don't actually do the I/O that's possible here, the next time you go around the loop, it's still going to be possible. And so select will immediately return, and you'll do this code again, which won't work again. And okay, so that's one little bugaboo here. The rule really is that if a file descriptor is ready, you're supposed to do the operation on it when select returns. Okay, so it's much better to do all of the I/O for all of the file descriptors here, rather than just do one of them. Right. One possibility would be to find the first one, do it, and then go around again. But you're really supposed to do all of them.
So you do all of them, and as you're doing all of them, you don't have to worry about unsetting it, because at the top of your code, you're going to reset
everything. We're going to reset everything to zero and start over again.
And then so when we read in from those file descriptors, it automatically knows that that data has been read and it's gone now.
That's right. Yeah. So if you read everything that's available from a file descriptor, then it becomes unreadable. You have to be careful, right? You could only do one read, right? You're only promised by select returning that a file descriptor is ready that you can do one read on that file descriptor.
So that means that our read doesn't have to be in a loop like we did before?
Well, we're using UDP sockets now, remember, which have message boundaries in them. If you do this with TCP sockets, yes, you still do have to put them in, you still have to put that read in a loop, but the loop has to include the select, which is ugly. Right? Because you have to, that means you have to keep track for all of your sockets where you are in their reading. It's wild.
So you might not
people do this.
But it still goes away once you read from it once?
What?
I'm sorry.
In TCP, you're guaranteed that if you do a read, you will get at least one byte of data, unless the socket has been closed at the other end. Okay? So, you will make progress, but you may not make as much progress as you need to make in order to actually be able to do anything.
So, for this case, though, like, say if, you know, on a socket there's, like, could be one message or it could be multiple messages, right? And we can only make one read. So we read there's no way to know how many is actually on it. So we just read a big chunk saying...
You read one message.
Oh, so you just read one message?
You do one read, and it will return one message with UDP.
Okay.
Right, because remember with UDP,
there
might be more there, but that's okay, because the next time you come around the loop, it'll say that's still ready, and you just do it again. Yeah, exactly. It works the way you expect it to work if you think about how it should work. I don't know how else to put it. It's a sensible design. It doesn't have a lot of surprises in it. There's one other thing here for timeout handling. Don't forget to reinitialize the timeout. And that actually points out that depending on what you want, this initialization may go outside the while loop. Right? So if the behavior you want is that if nothing becomes ready for 30 seconds, then do something, right, each time through this loop, then you initialize it here, like this. Right? So you go into select, it waits a maximum of 30 seconds and then returns. Right? And that's the behavior you get here. Suppose you put this outside the loop. Okay? And then when timeouts occur, reinitialize to 30 seconds. Then the behavior you get is that every 30 seconds you will get a timeout. That's different. See, in the one case, every time you go into select, you may wait up to 30 seconds.
You're saying it's like a safety net, basically, to put it out of
Well, the safety net is putting it on, initializing it here. But in your router, there's a behavior that's supposed to occur every 30 seconds. See the difference?
Okay.
So if you reinitialize this to 30 seconds here all the time, you may or may not ever get those timeouts. But if you put it outside and then reinitialize it when you get a timeout, then you will get the timeout every 30 seconds.
So you can schedule an event without having to have some global flag.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in the router, you're supposed to send out your distance vector every 30 seconds to your neighbor, regardless of whether it has changed or not. And so
sounds like a great place for a go-to.
No, you don't need a go-to. No, you don't need a go-to. In fact, you really don't want to go to, but I was about to say that, it's really good to package up whatever that timeout handling is in a procedure, package up whatever this processing is in a procedure. Don't try to spread that functionality, and don't try to put that functionality directly into this loop. You'll go nuts. Right? The loop structure is really clear when you lay it out this way. If you start stuffing a lot of code into it, it gets obscured.
And that actually be a good time to use
So,
and just have a place where you jump and go over and do your transmission, and you have the semaphore that lets you jump back into
No. This style of doing socket programming with select doesn't use threads.
Okay.
Right? The other way of doing it, you actually spread the file descriptors out amongst the threads, and they all wait independently for the work that they need to do. That's quite elegant.
Yeah.
But I said you may not use that for the for the project, because I want you to sort of deal with select. But that's slick. I mean, because there, especially if there's no interaction between these things, it's cool. Okay, I think that's the whole story about select. So just watch out, it's the maximum descriptor plus one that gets passed to select, and you have to have the number of descriptors in order to process that separate array and fill in the set of file descriptors. Okay? And reinitialize the timeouts when needed, and be sure to process the ready file descriptors.
In the project, we're only going to be using the timeout just for that 30 seconds. So
that's the only use for timeouts in the project. We're done. Have a great weekend.